This is the Hollywood Outsider After Hours, our alternative podcast where we host, let our hair down a little bit, slip into something a little more comfortable, and talk about geek stuff that doesn't fit in the usual ho episode. Our regular show will air on Thursdays, as always. My name is Justin McCumber. With me this week is Aaron Peterson. Aaron, you are the Frodo to my Sam. How are you doing today?
I'm just glad I'm not the Fat Hobbit.
No, well, you're the leader of this thing, so I kind of have to give you the Frodo role, so I'll take the Sam.
Well, I would disagree with that. I think Sam ended up being the leader.
Well, Frodo carried the ring most of the way, so he...
Well, yeah, well, that gives him he had status. Sam dragging his ass up a fucking mountain.
Oh, my God, you two quit stroking each other.
All right, you want to be the fat one? Fine, I'll be Frodo. And the Varys to my little finger, Brian Williams. How you doing, man?
I'm excellent, man.
That was an excellent reference.
Well, and he's glad to be the eunuch, so... There we go.
Hey, at least everybody, you know, at least I don't have anything. You've got, you know, you're known as Littlefinger.
So. Hey, it's just because I came from the finger aisles and I was
sure.
Small.
Keep telling yourself that.
Yeah.
Just like he does.
All right, guys. Well, this week we're going to be talking about the topic of fantasy. It's a genre that has waxed and waned over the years, coming into prominence and then kind of drifting away and coming back again. With the incredible success of Game of Thrones, as well as Peter Jackson's films, fantasy has really gotten quite a resurgence, at least so far as movies and television goes. And the book world, fantasy, as far as genre fiction goes, has always been the king, though the rising tide of some of the YA titles that are set more in our world is threatening it a little bit with future generations, but we may get into some of that later on. For many, the word fantasy instinctively brings to mind Tolkien's Middle Earth. But fantasy is really more than that. How do you guys define fantasy? And Brian, as our resident Game of Thrones aficionado, let me go to you first on that one. Let Aaron cool his heels for a moment.
All right. It's really very simple. You know, with the fantasy genre, you can really kind of group in there science fiction and even horror. And how I kind of look at it is if you can explain whatever's going on, whether it's an act a person's doing, whether it's a weapon, whatever, if you can explain that with science, then it's science fiction. If the reasoning is some sort of dark, occultish, supernatural in the, maybe the, for lack of a better term, a heaven and earth type of sense, then that's horror. Anything in between those, fantasy. Anything magicians and dragons, all that stuff, I mean, to me, that all kind of falls into what I consider fantasy.
Okay. Well, we'll challenge that a little bit in some later topics. Aaron, what about you?
Mine, the way I would define it is the absence of technology, because I believe that technology does belong in science fiction, kind of, I guess, to what Brian's saying, but more akin to a world where magic is relevant in one way or another, whether it be Harry Potter in today's world, so to speak, or in Tolkien's world, that sort of world. I think magic is a prominent factor. Not necessarily like Now You See Me. I don't consider that fantasy. But anywhere where magic is prevalent and is the deciding factor, not technology.
Hmm. All right. Well, I guess it kind of depends on what you mean by technology. You know, in the Lord of the Rings films, we see the Sauron's armies using things like trebuchets. That's a form of technology, a catapult or a crossbow. You might be able to categorize as a form of technology. And really when you get up into the Harry Potter world, while they don't use, you know, mundane cars and things like that, they do take some of that technology and kind of repurpose it. So I agree with you more than I think my comment is leading, but everyone's definition of what is technology and what is it not may differ.
That's fair.
But I see what you're saying. We're magic is the predominant means of getting things done, maybe.
Yeah, there's no phasers, there's no there's no guns, there's no lasers, there's no lightsabers. It's all just magic, just the Force. Mm-hmm. I mean, Star Wars comes close, but they've got all those big ships, so that cancels them out.
Well, you know, some people have argued that Star Wars, despite its science fiction trappings, is really more of a fantasy story at its heart. I mean, it does follow the James Campbell heroes myth, which more often than not is ascribed to fantasy stories. And really, a lot of the stories that caused that creation myth to even be put together are fantasy. So, you know, take away the lightsabers, replace them with magic swords, take away spaceships and replace them with ships and horses. It's a fantasy. It's not like Star Trek, where you can't so easily replace certain aspects of it with a fantasy equivalent, and it still works just as well. There's nothing in Star Wars, maybe aside from the Death Star itself, there's very little that it had to be science or it had to be technology, that there it easily could have been changed. So there are people who kind of argue that Star Wars is fantasy, but
you know, another defining characteristic, the difference between fantasy and science fiction is fantasy is a genre where if you're speaking about a book or a game or a movie, whatever it is, if you get anything wrong when you're describing it to a fellow real fantasy enthusiast, you better be prepared because they're going to rip you to fucking shreds and make you cry and make you go home and wish you never brought it up. There's that.
So you think fantasy fans are more vehement and
No. They adhere to vicious? Detail. They adhere to detail. Because I think most, and I'm speaking for most fantasy elements are extremely well envisioned. They're very thorough and detailed, and there's a lot of world to whatever the world is. You know, there's a lot of richness, and I think they really pay attention to that. I think that's why a lot of those diehard fans love it, is because that world is brought to life so visually and realistically and in such lush detail. Mm-hmm. And I think they know every aspect of it.
I get what you're talking about there. For me, fantasy is really any story in which the characters and their adventure isn't revolving around... Well, first, the very first ingredient is that there has to be some otherworldly element to it. Even if a story has a ghost or a vampire, that doesn't necessarily make it a horror story. Because if you look at, you know, and I know everybody hates them, but if you look at the Twilight books, those have classical horror creatures in them, but they're not horror. Those are actually what a lot of people term the genre as urban fantasy. Mm-hmm. Because those characters are used in a more fantastical way and less of a horrific way. Horror, for me, is really more of a genre that's based around an emotion and less a theme or tropes. Horror, whether it's a slasher or a vampire, if it's intended to scare you, then that is what makes it horror, not necessarily just that someone has a knife or fangs. And I guess what I mean by that is vampires can be fantasy. A lot of horror tropes can be in fantasy. As long as it's intended as a fantastical element, then I think it works. And like Brian said, and you said, if it's not technology, isn't one of the main components. Because there's some science fiction that can also be horror. I guess what I'm saying is that there's a lot of genre that can blend together, but fantasy involves otherworldly elements in a fantastical way as opposed to a scary way. It's science is usually not a big element to it.
You just made somebody's head explode.
I think I made my own head explode. You can probably hear it dripping down my chest next to the microphone.
I'm surprised Brian's right. Still here.
What?
Is he drinking again?
Oh, I wish.
No, not for a while. Not for a while.
I think he used it up.
Yeah. So it may be episode 200 before that happens again.
All right. Fantasy is also wrongly thought of by many as the domain of the young, or at least the young at heart. But there's a long tradition of fantasy that's actually aimed at more mature audiences. When it comes to the fantasy that you guys appreciate, do you prefer the stuff that's aimed more at the young Or are you a bigger fan of the more dark and grisly kind of fantasy?
I don't actually like much of the youth-themed fantasy. Mm-hmm. I really don't. I mean, I'll give an exception to Harry Potter. I think the films...
Why do you give that an exception?
I think it's a little darker than most youth-animated... Or youth-animated. Youth-aimed. Thank you. Youth-aimed fantasy novels. I don't think it's really so youth-aimed as people think it is. And just like Lord of the Rings, I don't think that's aimed at a younger audience. I think it's actually a very dark book if you actually read it. You know, the themes that he was going for were very dark. And I think Harry Potter ultimately became a very dark series. And unfortunately, for whatever reason, it was popular with kids, younger adults. But the series continuously got more darker and darker and darker. And I think that's lost for some reason. People think of it as some happy-go-lucky franchise, and I never really got that out of it.
Well, I mean, do you think it took so long for the books, you know, over time? I mean, I don't know how far apart they came. I know it was between a couple of the books. It was quite a while, though. But, I mean, it's not like when – I would imagine anyway, because when you read the first book that you really knew where it was going to go. So it's not like when the first – let's say the first two books are out, the first three books, somebody gets word about it and goes, oh, I hear this is pretty good. I'll start reading it. Man, this is great. I don't know if you're really new, especially as a parent, or, you know, if that's a concern, you know, like a parental concern, like, man, I don't know if they would read that and go, man, this thing's going to go really dark down the road. I don't know if I want my kid reading this.
I think if you look at stuff like Percy Jackson or whatever, that seems to me more young adult than I would say Harry Potter. I don't know why it became seen as a young adult franchise, but I really think that she was ultimately always going for a darker theme. I really don't get that she was ever trying to be for little kids.
Well, of the three of us, have all of us read all the Harry Potter books?
I haven't read all of them, though. No. I've read most of them.
Which ones have you read?
I've read 1, 2, 3, 4, and 7.
What about you, Brian?
No, I haven't read any of them.
I've read them all, and... I really, one of the things I love about J.K. Rowling is that she did several things that very few writers have managed to pull off. The first one being that she wrote a series that aged with its readers. Most series of books maintain a pretty constant level of who it's aimed at and who its audience is going to be. Not many actually change and evolve over time, but hers did. But I also think it's an incredibly effective Trojan horse for fantasy. I think that one of the reasons we do see such a huge acceptance of not just fantasy, but geek culture in general is due in some part to the success of Harry Potter. Up until those books came out, children's literature in particular was just kind of this floundering wasteland of books that very few good ones were coming into it. And really, I feared that kids just weren't going to read anymore. But suddenly this series comes in. It gets incredibly popular, not only amongst kids, but adults. And that sparked a revolution in publishing. And there are, when you walk into your average bookstore these days, the teen section and the children's young adult sections are massive, and they're getting bigger and bigger all the time. And I think those books are a part of it. But I think that the first two Harry Potter books, while there are dark elements to them, I think that the way she wrote them, the language she used, the way she put her words together were more children's book typed. They read like a kid's book. They were very simple, you know, no complicated structurings of sentences, no big words, you know, other than some character names and what have you. But it was very simply told, and that's how children's books are. But by the third one and onward, each one got successively darker and more complicated and more mature. Mm-hmm. But I think that it started off definitely as a children's series, but it was also a series that adults could find something to enjoy and reasons for why they would want their kids to read it, which really I think all good children's stories should do, whether it's a movie like Despicable Me or the Pixar films or a TV show or a book. If you can get adults interested in it too, you've won half the battle.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that.
But what about when it comes to the dark and grisly stuff? Are you more a fan of that, would you say, than Aaron?
I am, absolutely. Yeah, I don't really particularly like Everybody Lives and That's a Happily Ever After story. That's just not something I get into. I like, if I'm going to read something, I want it to have some kind of realistic elements to it where the hero always wins. It just doesn't really doesn't appeal to me in a fantasy novel. Lord of the Rings aside, I don't like it.
Well, not everybody lives in Lord of the Rings either.
No, I know, but I'm just saying that's the predominant literature that people mm-hmm. that people pull from. Game of Thrones, I mean, I like that type of storytelling, maybe with less nudity for the series, but I like that type of storytelling. I like it. It's more honest. It's more adult. It's more, you really see what that world would be like if that world were real. As opposed to, you know, this happy-go-lucky, we can solve everything, just let's all bond together shit. You know, that's great and has its place. I prefer a little bit more edge.
What about you, Brian? I really, yeah, no offense to you, of course, but I just don't see you curling up with a story aimed at the youth market.
For unicorns and
fairies
spraying pixie dust everywhere.
Right.
Yeah.
No, My Little Pony is playing in your house.
Oh, Brian strikes me as a brony. You're not a brony. He's a brony.
No.
He's a closet brony.
Not even jokingly. Sorry.
He just took offense. You officially offended me.
Now we're going to fight. So. I'm with Aaron. I like the darker. It doesn't. Yeah, I just like the darker edge stuff. I just have it a little more realistic, and I use that term very loosely. After all, it is fantasy we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
I do like a little bit of a fantasy element grounded in reality. Much like Game of Thrones. I mean, at this point, I haven't read the books. I don't know what's coming. So, you know, please don't hammer me if you've read the books. And, you know, like, I know there is a very large fantastical element to the series. I just don't know exactly to what capacity. And but I'm fine with that. I like that as an element. I don't need to see necessarily a land full of, I don't know, I keep the images of what is it, Legend with...
Tim Curry pops up?
Yeah. Although he was the best thing about that movie.
He was.
Let's just say. The little fairies bouncing around and the whatever those little guys that were traveling with him, the dwarves or whatever they were. So I just don't need all that stuff. I like to see, you know, I like action. I like people fighting, big dragon swooping in, burning people.
So like Nicolas Cage's whatever. Season of the Witch, did that work for you?
If you would have put somebody else in there other than Nicolas Cage, it would have worked for me. But yeah, that was an entertaining movie. It wasn't good, but it was entertaining.
Understood.
I don't know if you guys got them when you were in elementary school. We used to get these, look kind of like little newsletters, and they were filled with books that you could order. And I think they were for like a reduced price, and maybe the more you bought, the cheaper they were. Does that ring any bells with you guys?
The Scholastic Newsletter, I think, is what it's called.
Mine, what about you, Brian? Did they have much book learning?
In learning houses?
Yeah, no, most. Yeah, we didn't. I didn't even see a book till I was probably in the ninth grade, and that was because I was, they bussed me over to the big city.
But we used to get those, and I think I was in first or second grade. And there was a book called The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Yep,
and for some reason, I don't know why, but for some reason, it looked like something that I wanted to read. And so I asked my parents to get me this book through that little program. And that was the beginning. Since then, my appreciation for C.S. Lewis has diminished a little bit, you know, the more that I've learned about, you know, how, you know, he's a pretty super Christian, and a lot of the things that he wrote in those series had a lot of Christian allegories and whatnot. So my memory of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and The Prince Caspian, and Voyage of the Dawn Treader, all those books, has been kind of diminished a little bit because of that. I hate to say it. But those were my introduction not only to reading, but to fantasy. And ever since then, I've been a pretty big fantasy fan from reading those and onward up until. And, you know, you mentioned The Lord of the Rings, and it's funny you mentioned that wasn't what you would consider children's fantasy. And I found it kind of funny that you completely did not mention The Hobbit, because he wrote The Hobbit first.
Because that is children's fantasy, that's why.
And that was children's fantasy. And he intended that more for children. In fact, he and C.S. Lewis had quite a kind of little competition amongst each other. And The Lord of the Rings was more of an adult follow-up to the children's book of The Hobbit. And for a lot of people, The Hobbit was their first brush.
So. Absolutely. And you know what? It's not three movies worth of material either. But.
Well, it is not, but when you add The Silmarillion and a lot of other things, you can make more of it. The thing is that what so many people hate is when they make a movie of a book and then they have to remove fuck tons of things to make it fit. Well, here he's actually extending it out to make three movies, so you have to cut less and then actually adding things in, and yet you still get people bitching.
It's damn right.
You just can't please some people.
You sure can't.
Absolutely. Giving you more fantasy than you actually asked for. But as far as dark and grisly, as I've gotten older, that seems to be more, you know, more my pleasure. I think actually Legend is a darker film than maybe people want to appreciate. Sure, it opens up kind of idyllic.
Right. Now, that was kind of the imagery that I've kind of had going on in my squirrely head, was all the little glitter, the soft light.
Right. The little sprites and things.
Right.
Yeah, it's the way it was shot. I mean, it's really a darkly themed movie. It just doesn't seem like it when you're watching it.
Right. Yeah. And it's a beautiful movie. Ridley Scott did an amazing job. Have we ever covered that movie really in the Outsider?
I think you might have.
We've
done
talked about it in the past. Yeah,
we've talked about it.
Okay. If it hasn't been a flashback yet, then expect it to be one soon. But
I remember we were actually talking about how Tim Curry's Satan, Devil, whatever.
Yeah, Prince of Darkness.
Prince of Darkness was probably the best rendition out of any TV.
Oh, yeah. I mean, with those big black horns and that big red bodysuit he wore and the appliances on his face, it was pretty incredible. But Legend was an early film that I thoroughly enjoyed and kind of led into a darker, grislier kind of horror. I remember being a just real young lad, and my uncle and his wife sat us all down and watched the first Arnold Schwarzenegger Conan movie. And that's a pretty dark and grisly fantasy film as well, with all the spirit fucking and things that go on.
Spirit fucking.
In that movie. But, you know, not all fantasy has to take place, you know, in a far-off mystical world or in the past. What are some fantasy stories that have taken place in the here and now that you enjoy? We've already mentioned Harry Potter, and that was going to be my choice. I think those are incredibly fun and pleasurable reads, as well as, you know, the movies. They're not great, but they're not terrible. You know, they're fun enough. But for you guys, are there any other franchises or stories you can think of that are fantasy but take place in kind of the here and now that you like?
I hate to say this, and it really goes, of course, against what I was just talking about liking the darker and grislier ones, but the one that I actually enjoyed was the Percy Jackson movie.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not cinema gold. You know, it probably won't be on the flashbacks anytime soon. But it was you know, it just was a good movie that had pretty good special effects. I mean, it was I guess because I had a good time. I always loved Greek mythology and everything, stuff like that, growing up. So I guess to me, to kind of find how they weave that into a modern day time was pretty cool. So that's one of my more underrated ones, I guess, for the here and now stuff.
Oh, and before anybody mentions it, you don't have to mention A Minor Magic. It's a given that you guys love it, so please don't shine sunshine up my ass when you don't have to.
Absolutely. We don't
I'd hate for it to get mentioned too often. A Minor Magic available through Amazon and
such
all
a
your
chill.
Good
such a chill.
God forbid we don't want to pimp that so much.
You know one that I consider it fantasy. I don't care if it had pre-existing elements or not. I would say Thor. I think Thor is a great fantastical film. It's a fantasy film. It really is a fantasy film. I don't know how you would dispute that it's not. It is a comic book movie, technically.
Well, some people would call it a sci-fi film, but...
I think it's more fantasy, but what do I know?
Right, well, yeah. I mean, a lot of its magic, a lot of its sci-fi elements looks like magic and acts like magic. So, you know, if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck...
It's probably Thor. Mm-hmm. I would also... Oz, I thought Oz was great. Or very good, not great, but... It was a very good realization of a very interesting fantasy world. What else? Probably Clash of the Titans, the original Clash of the Titans, mm-hmm. would be one that, as a kid, that would probably be the one film that got me interested in fantasy. Because really, fantasy hadn't been done that well, probably because of it was too expensive, special effects and whatnot.
Yeah, but I was talking about existing fantasy stories that take place in our world. And
well, then I got Thor. That's really all I got. I got Thor.
You know, Supernatural,
that's all I got.
Some people might say it's more horror, but really if you watch the show, there are tons of fantasy elements that are in Supernatural. And I think that, you know, if it was a book series, it would be in the urban fantasy kind of section. So I think Supernatural is a fun one. There's a comic book series called Lock and Key that takes place in a modern day main town of Lovecraft, and it's got modern kids dealing with modern kid shit as well as these magical keys that do all sorts of wondrous things. I love that one quite a bit. The Dresden Files, it only lasted for one season as a TV show, but I really did enjoy the TV show that Syfy put together. But the book series, I've read the first book and it was pretty good. And all of my friends who've read the rest of those books have nothing but amazing things to say about the Dresden Files. And that's definitely modern day. Hell, I think even really Buffy in a lot of ways you could term a fantasy. Sure, it had vampires, but they really weren't all that scary.
I wouldn't call that one fantasy at all. But
well, considering how many elements of the witch and the magic and other elements of fantasy were involved in it, I think it's as arguably a fantasy as it is a horror.
Then I think you should leave my Thor alone, because Thor counts.
No, I left your Thor alone.
Damn right
I didn't
you
take
did.
It away from you.
Son of a bitch, you're damn right you did. Bitch.
Never touch another man's Thor.
What about Pan's Labyrinth? Is that?
Yeah, I mean, it took place more during World War II, but I would go with that.
Yeah. That would be one that I would consider just a beautifully shot and wonderfully done film.
Right. All right, well, I'm glad none of you mentioned A Minor Magic, so that's good. All right.
I think you mentioned it enough for everybody.
Fantasy is one of those genres that I think more than any gives life to not just characters, but also weapons. Lightsabers aside, and maybe phasers, there's really not a lot of sci-fi weapons that you can call or that even really have their own individual names. But fantasy is really rife with weapons that are named and have their own particular powers. Are there any that you would call a favorite?
I will go sticking with Thor. I've got to go with Thor's hammer, Mjolnir.
That's a good one. I thought you had more to it.
No, I do. I do. You just sound like
I'm sorry.
Just,
you wanted to meet
you off
to
your chair or something.
Okay.
So
good pick, Ryan. Good pick.
That's what I'm looking for.
Okay.
That's what.
Nice job.
Immediate validation. I got it.
Absolutely. Hey man. That's what we're all about. I just always thought that was cool. It was just the only man worthy enough to use it can use it, and at least in the comic books, you know it. The guy we know as Thor isn't actually the only one who eventually uses it. Others have, but it's just, I think it's really cool. Of course, the power of flight and controlling the weather, that kind of stuff is pretty cool too. So It beats any glow-in-the-dark sword, I think, any day of the week.
Huh. Boy, you're not bad talking about lightsabers now. Oh, God, just the sound.
I could be referring to Sting.
Ah, that's true. If orcs are around, then Sting does glow.
Mm, yep. There you go. I'm going to go cliche. I'm going to say the ring. The One Ring. That's a weapon.
That is a weapon.
That one ring will bring about the destruction of Middle Earth. Yes, absolutely. It's a weapon.
All right. I'm gonna let it slide on a technicality. If I hadn't allowed that, what would you have said?
If you wouldn't have allowed that?
Mm-hmm. He would have just argued. You know him.
He spent 10-15 minutes bitching and moaning.
That's true. Wizard staff. I mean, I'd probably just go that route.
Any one of them in particular?
No, I can't name them. I'm sure they all have names, but I don't know what their names are.
I don't know what Gandalf's staff was called. I do know what his sword was called. Do any of you know?
Bet you do.
Glamdring?
Wow! Give Brian a fucking golden star! Yeah! Glamdring. Very good. That is awesome. For me, I do have a favorite, and I do have an honorable mention, as I always do. Mm-hmm. there's a series of books called Elric, or based on a character called Elric. It's written by Michael Moorcock, and it's about this albino elf who is, you know, a sorcerer, extremely weak, but through the use of a sword that he has called Stormbringer. When he kills someone or cuts them, the sword actually drains their life essence and gives it to him. And when I first started reading the Elric books at the urging of my uncle and read about Stormbringer, and then it has a brother blade called Mornbringer, loved the idea of an all black, you know, like a sword carved out of obsidian with these glowing red runes down the blade and then it bestowing strength and health upon the wielder of the blade. I really, really just thoroughly enjoy that. And in every artist's rendition of Elric, I always love to see their different takes on what Stormbringer looks like. But as an honorable mention, the glaive from Kroll.
Yep, I know what you're talking about. That was pretty cool.
That five-bladed, it looks kind of like a big throwing star. But those blades that come—that
was pretty badass. Even though it was shitty 3D, but it was still pretty badass.
Oh, it was terrible. But when I was a kid, that thing seemed so badass, and I always tried to weave it into whatever, you know, games I was playing. And that kind of leads into the next topic. You know, one of my earliest brushes with fantasy was Dungeons and Dragons, the old pencil and paper game that you played with dice. And I know that I tried to give...
Oh, different. Sorry.
Oh, not that time. Shit.
Unbelievable. Oh! That explains Justin smoking at 12.
And I know I always tried to give every one of my characters somehow find a way to give them a glaive and make up the statistics for it. And that's how much I love that weapon. But, you know, a lot of people, some of their first initiations into fantasy is through Dungeons and Dragons, unless you're Scott Clark and your parents are uber Christians into them. Dungeons and Dragons would have been nothing but a devil's manual on how to steal your soul. Have either of you played any paper RPGs, and if you haven't, have you played any fantasy role-playing games on the computer or on a console?
I've played the actual paper game.
Mm-hmm. Now, first edition, second edition, third, fourth.
Fuck if I know, man. I just went to a couple gatherings and tried to keep
up. How long
up.
Ago?
Oh, this is probably 15 years ago. It was a long time ago. But they had the whole Dungeon Master. You know, everybody had their paper and your die, and you're rolling. Trying, you know, it strikes, and it's very, very dramatic. And I don't know, Brian, have you ever done this? Because it's very cool. I just have a hard time keeping up with it.
No, actually, I never did play. Nobody in my circle played those kinds of games. I even had the Marvel Comics version.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
and
nobody had, would play with you.
Yeah, yeah. Basically, nobody was like, "Yeah, there's too much explaining going on here. Let's go ride bikes."
It is really detailed. I mean, I was actually amazed. I'd always wanted to play it because I had friends that played it all the time, and you'd hear about it, but you couldn't keep up because you know. Well, Justin, you played quite a bit, right? So you know that once the world was established, it's really hard to just jump in, you know, because everybody has whatever their characters created and everything else. So to try and jump into that is really hard to do, and you're trying to keep up. And the more time that you take away from them playing the game, the more that they get frustrated. It's not as fun for them. So I played a few times. It seemed really fun. It's just I couldn't catch up to where they were. So it seemed like I was distracting them more than, you know, helping.
Yeah, you probably were.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, that's the deal with D&D. If you have a tight group that's been playing for a while, then their characters are going to be a certain level. And then when you suddenly come in, and not only are you a new person that they maybe don't know how to socialize with and conversate, that's a joke for offline joke. But your character is also probably going to be a lower level, so somebody's going to always have to be protecting you or watching out for you, and that can be a pain. But when I was, I don't know how old I was, I think I was about 10, a friend of mine played Dungeons & Dragons, and I tried to get into it, and because I didn't have the books, it was basically impossible. But when my dad, who was in the Army, moved us to Fort Hood, I saw some kids in the gym playing out. And seeing back then, D&D came in two varieties. There was Dungeons and Dragons, which came in a red box, which was your beginner, and then the blue box, which I think was intermediate or expert. And then each box of new rules went along with your characters as they leveled up. And God, I think there was the red, then blue, and then I think there was green, then black and gold or something. But that was D&D. But then there was Advanced to Dungeons & Dragons, which were purely these hardback books. You had your Dungeon Master's Guide, and then you had your Player Manual, and then your Monster Manuals. And then as time went on, they started adding more and more books to that series with Unearthed Arcana, which had all these items, more and more Monster Manuals. And then they started introducing whole new playing worlds that your characters could play in. The first world, I think it was called Greyhawk, and it was more your Tolkien ripoff of a fantasy world. But then they got Forgotten Realms, and then they got these more Asian influenced, and then more Middle Eastern influenced. It really blossomed and spread. But I think today there really is just D&D. There's no separation of them. And I think they're on the fourth generation or fourth edition of rules. I'm just speaking Greek, aren't I?
And can I tell you, in regards to the game, the thing that always cracked me up about that is, you know, 20 years ago, when we were in school, people that played it, I mean, you're guaranteed to get a wedgie, right? Just because you played it.
Oh, yeah.
But if you look now, the same guys that, you know, they might still be playing it or they get into it, those are generally, and I'm generally speaking, the smartest friends you have. Mm-hmm. Sincerely, and I don't mean that to generalize people, but the smartest friends I have play D&D regularly.
And that's one of the good things about these pen and paper role-playing games is that it weeds out the dumb ones pretty quickly. Like, you cannot be stupid and play these games because they're involved in a lot of different ways, whether it's keeping all the rules in mind or just the envisioning of the world that's that your characters are playing in. It takes a pretty sharp mind to play it. So luckily, you don't have to suffer fools for very long while you're doing it. And I had played a lot when I was in elementary and in the middle school. And then I kind of stopped for a while because I just wasn't, we moved to another place and nobody played it until I actually was into my early 20s. And I worked with a guy who played with a group. And so for about 5 or 6 more years, I started playing with them. And that was when the third edition rules came out, which was a huge deal because for over a decade, D&D had been stuck in a particular set of rules. But then when Wizards of the Coast, which is a company that created Magic the Gathering, purchased the Dungeons & Dragons license from a company called TSR, they created these third edition rules, which really just overhauled the entire gaming system. And it took away a lot of things that kind of made it hard for hard's sake, simplified some of the rules, and added just a lot of common sense to them. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. I don't play it anymore, but I always kind of wish that I did have that every other Saturday game going.
That was a big social event too. I mean, guys, just, you know, people, I think people thought it was
girls.
Just,
we had two or three girls.
I didn't see any girls in the group. Ones I went to, because that would have made it, I would have been a lot more interested in learning how to play.
Oh yeah, we had some, and sadly all the guys were always kind of, you know, hey, I'll protect her, and
oh Lord,
it was always kind of sad.
I'd be throwing them in the fire.
But do you guys play, are you interested or do you play electronic role-playing games?
I'm not. I don't like role-playing games. World of Warcraft is way too vast a world and consumes way too much time for me to invest in. So I think
what
that's
about like The Witcher or Baldur's Gate?
It's the same thing as games. Same thing as with the Dungeons & Dragons paper game. It's too time-consuming, so I don't want to really put the time in. That's honest.
So it's just not shooty-shooty?
Kind
of,
yeah.
Takes an ounce of brain you can't play?
No,
I got
it. No, it's not the brain thing. It's just, man, I don't have the time. And it's they require way too much time. When a game requires, like, I can do multiplayer because you can put 100 hours in, but it can be 100 random hours, you know, over the course of a year or something like that. You got an RPG, you put in 40 hours, that's just like one story. And mm-hmm. I just don't have time to be that invested in it. I really wish I did, but I just don't.
Yeah, I don't. That's the main reason I don't play many of those. The really the last RPG I played was Borderlands 2. I mean,
yeah, that's borderline.
That's barely,
yeah,
right,
barely a role playing game.
Exactly, but it's because I don't want to. I mean, when I play a game, I don't want to miss anything, so I do all the side missions. I do all that stuff, and after a while, I'm just like, for God's sakes, I've had enough of this, and I never follow through with the finishing it. So I used to like them as a kid on like the Sega, you know, but it was, you know, a lot more downscaled, I guess, than it is now. So
I'm actually notorious amongst my gamer friends for how I will never play side missions. Brian will tell you, you know, if there's a game,
it's going to be so fun.
I never find them fun. They're always just stuff. I want to start and finish it, and then I want to be done with it.
Even like a game like Mass Effect, that it's not a fantasy, but it's still a role-playing game. It's kind of action-oriented.
I tried playing it, and it's too much. Go here, and then it ventures off to this land. I want a linear story. I want to be done with it. Mm. I just don't have the time.
So no Skyrim for either of you.
Fuck no.
No.
When somebody tells me I put in 60 hours into a game and it was one story, I'm like,
Oh, God. For the Elder Scrolls Oblivion that came out on the 360, by the time I finished that, I had 130 hours put into that one. And I put in, I think, about 30 or 40 hours into Skyrim before I just said, oh, I can't do this anymore. I like role-playing games. I'm a huge fan of the Baldur's Gate games and all those, and especially what BioWare did with Mass Effect and those games. But when it really becomes so open world that you can literally go anywhere, I get tired kind of fast because, like you guys, I I'm not as narrowly focused in I want a mission to go from A to B. I do like to have a bit of direction, and the BioWare has really made an art out of giving you a world that looks open-ended and you can kind of do, you know, take missions in what order you want, but when you're in a mission it's pretty straightforward, and I really do enjoy those quite a bit. I've never played World of Warcraft. I never will play it. Mostly because I have an incredibly obsessive, believe it or not, personality. And a game like that, I would cease to exist. And I would eventually die like one of those poor Korean kids sitting in front of my computer just wasted away to a husk.
With about 45 Red Bull, empty Red Bull bottles.
Oh, God, yeah. That and my fingers just pee
stains
covered
on the carpet.
In an inch of Cheeto powder.
Oh. Well, thanks for that visual.
When you look for fantasy, and you guys probably don't, but when you look for fantasy at your local library or bookstore, a lot of the titles you find could really just double as doorstops and boat anchors because they are so fucking big. What are books you'd recommend for the uninitiated fantasy readers to ease them into the genre? And I guess I could also open this up to what would you recommend just in general, whether it's a movie or a TV series? If someone says fantasy, I don't want to read about elves. What would you do? You know, or God, I don't want to read that first Game of Thrones book because the fucker would kill me if I dropped it. What would you recommend? Something to ease them into fantasy.
I'd recommend Game of Thrones season one. I would the series, not the book. I would recommend The Princess Bride.
Oh God, yes.
Because
yes.
That's
good.
Easy, soft. It's very subtle. It's not too much. I mean, it's a good introduction to that kind of world. Books wise, Harry Potter. I really think if you're new to that world and you're not really sure if you're gonna like it, I think it tells a story very, like you said, simply for the first couple books. So it really can get you into it, as opposed to if you try to start with Lord of the Rings, fuck it, you're done. If you're not into that type of storytelling, you will never get through it.
Do you think, and this, do you think that, and since you've only seen the first Hobbit film, that's the only one you can really judge, Do you think that the first Hobbit film would be easier for someone to get into than Fellowship of the Ring?
Actually,
as far as films go?
No, I don't think so. I think Fellowship of the Ring was a more deftly told story. Mm-hmm. So I think it's probably easier for people to get behind it. I thought The Hobbit was kind of the story. I mean, because, you know, you read the book. The story is pretty simple. It's not very detailed. And I think there's a lot of fluff in The Hobbit. Whereas I think Fellowship of the Ring, I was really involved. Every character I thought was extremely well cast. I can find a couple flaws in The Hobbit. I thought Fellowship was one of the most perfect adaptations of a book I've ever seen.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what about you, Brad?
Really, the first book that came to mind was, oddly enough, and I know you're real familiar with this book, but it's a Stephen King book.
Oh, Eyes of the Dragon?
Eyes of the Dragon, yeah. Hmm. It's been a while since I've read it. From what I remember, I mean, the basic gist of it is you got two brothers that are princes, mm-hmm. princes, not princess.
Prince
They're both
I.
Prince. They're, yeah, exactly. Prince, the plural form prince of I. prince. They set out to destroy Flag, which is funny because it's got character names that show up in other Stephen King stories.
Yeah, it's actually a Dark Tower book.
Right. Basically, yeah. So anyway, the evil magician guy, he, of course, he's threatening to rule the world, whatever. It's just a very easy read, even though it's still got a lot, so, you know, still gory, still got a lot of violence and stuff in it, but it is a very easy read. Mm-hmm. It's not 1500 pages. I mean, I don't know. It's probably 500 pages, if that. I don't know. It's been so long since I've even seen the book. But it was a good read. And I would agree, as far as TV goes, I mean, Game of Thrones, that first season is just one hell of a show. It's really hard to do fantasy for TV.
Very hard. Very, very hard.
And I don't think that you can, I just don't think you can do it and do it well for mainstream, especially for network TV. You do need, we as a culture pretty much have proven that we want something darker and edgier. Look at all the quote unquote best shows on TV. Mm-hmm. You know, you got Breaking Bad, Game of Thrones, Walking Dead. We want something that has an edge to it. And you can't do that on network TV. So it's because that first season has just got so many. If you don't know what the first thing about it, it will hook you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. With Game of Thrones, to me, it's, you know, pardon the pun, it's a little bit of a two-edged sword. Because on the one hand, you don't have a lot of the things that might put someone off of fantasy. You know, you don't have a lot of wizards walking around or spells being cast. You don't have a lot of creature, in fact, really any aside from a glimpse of White Walkers and the wolves. you really don't have any monsters roaming around. So for those people who turn their noses up at things like elves and shit, Game of Thrones is much more of a easier pill to swallow. Mm-hmm. On the downside, though, you have got so many characters and so many names, and I know I heard a lot of people who were complaining that they just could not keep up with the characters and what their relationships were to each other.
Oh yeah, that shit's becoming
those
like
sorts of things. And so I think that's can kind of bring people down. I think it's a matter of how much can you follow it. I think those who sadly can't follow it, just they're not going to enjoy it.
I agree. I guess because I love it so much.
Well, you're smarter than the average bear.
I just kind of look at it though as that gives me more to pick up again the second or third time that I watch it. Because mm-hmm. even now there's still little things like, oh wow, okay, now that I've seen this character in season two or three, now this little scene, or maybe, hey, now I know who this person is. This person who was just had an indus just a minor 10-second
magic
role. Yeah, just just a 10-second role within, 10 hours of show. Now all of a sudden is this prominent character, 2 years later. So this, I don't know, that's part of the thing that makes it good for me.
One of the reasons I think that's a good show for the uninitiated is because for the majority of the show, of the first season anyway, there are no fantasy elements. I mean, there's a few subtle ones, but for the vast majority, it's a medieval show, which isn't mm-hmm. fantasy. It's just, it takes place in medieval times. There are little touches here and there, obviously it ends very fantasy related, but overall, just a very enthralling series with a lot of characters and a lot of storylines that are interesting. And that might draw people in because, you were talking about Scott. Scott doesn't really like fantasy a whole lot, but the series sucked him in because of the way the story is told. And I think that works for a lot of people. That's why it's becoming such a water cooler show. Not that we trust me, we talk about this show enough. We should probably just move on from it. But
I think it was more the boobs that drew him in than
possibly.
All right. I will say, though, that with the success of Game of Thrones, I'm really shocked that especially Showtime, but, maybe even Stars or one of those other channels, hasn't tried to get their own fantasy franchise going. I mean, I think a series of books that equals Game of Thrones in its number of fans and the passion behind them is a series of books called The Wheel of Time. There are people who are just ravenous for those books. Unfortunately, the guy who wrote them and created it died, and so the series is being finished off by Brandon Sanderson and based on the notes that were left over. But there are all other fantasy franchises that I think would be easy for, maybe not easy, but would be good ones to be picked up and made into their own series. But maybe Showtime just doesn't want to feel like they're copying what Game of Thrones did.
Isn't that that series that's, what is it, like 25 books or something like that?
I think they just came out with like the 13th.
Holy crap. 13th.
I mean, yeah, it's...
And these are big fucking doorstoppers themselves.
Right. Why can't Martin write a little faster?
My father-in-law has read all those books, and he's recommended them to me, and he was like, yeah, it's like on volume 11 or something that like that now. And I'm like, yeah, no, that's not going to happen. That's sorry.
But it could be made into a TV series. I'm surprised that it hasn't. So, who knows? Somebody may do it. But I think HBO struck such gold with Game of Thrones that everybody else would just automatically be looked at as, they're just copying. Yeah, they're just trying to jump on the fantasy train.
I absolutely agree. And normally, actually, you would see a few shows trying to emulate that by now. But I think they're just too worried about spending that much money and getting it wrong.
Yeah.
Because those ain't cheap.
No, they are not. As a last regular question for this episode, what is your favorite underrated fantasy film? Because if there is one genre that has got some shit films, it is fantasy. Hollywood has made, it has a long storied history of fucking up and making terrible fantasy movies. What's your favorites of them? Maybe not terrible, underrated, but maybe even a guilty pleasure.
Brian, go ahead.
Oh.
I'll get shit for mine.
I'm going to go with a movie that's, it's not a Monty Python movie, but it is made by one of the bigger minds behind Monty Python, and that's The Adventures of Baron Munchausen.
Ooh. Oh, yeah.
Nice.
It is a, it's whatever. It's basically about a guy telling some fantastical stories about some adventures he's been on, and may, he may or may not be totally full of shit, but it's, but it is just very creative. It is, it takes you all over crazy places, and you have people playing multiple roles. So it was just it's just one of those, I think, late towards the later 80s, 87 or 88, I think it was when it came out. But just one of those. He's more famous. Terry Gilliam, the director for it, is more famous for Brazil, which is
12
kind of
Monkeys.
Another 12. Well, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, he's more famous for Brazil, I would say.
Yeah,
I would agree with that.
But Baron Munchausen is one I would recommend checking out.
What about you, Aaron?
Well, I was going to say Time Bandits, but I don't think that's underrated. I think.
Well, and that's a sci-fi, really.
Yeah, so it's kind of.
It is about time travel.
Teetering. Dragonheart. I love Dragonheart.
Oh, that was terrible.
I love Dragonheart. Oh. Fuck off.
Oh,
I love it.
God.
I told you I'd get shit for it. I knew it.
Oh.
I like Dragonheart. I had.
No, you like Dennis Quaid.
I do,
yes,
like Dennis Quaid.
That's all.
You had
that's
Dennis all Quaid. You had Sean Connery. I love the dragon. I just thought it was a fun movie. It's not deep and it's not complicated, but it's a fun and it's a family movie. Like I used to watch it with my kids when they were little. So,
oh god,
I like that movie. Fuck off.
No. I mean, I think a lot of the reason I give it shit is because I was so ready for that movie to be fantastic. It came out after Jurassic Park, didn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think, you know, when Jurassic Park came out and you saw those dinosaurs, you know, I know geeks all over the world thought, yes, with these dinosaurs looking as good as they do, goddamn, they can do dragons now. And when Dragonheart was announced, I thought, fuck, you've got Sean Connery doing the voice of a dragon. This has got to be awesome. And it for me, it just... It just thumped like a dragon turd.
I liked
just big and
it.
Smelly.
I really liked it. Yeah, I knew it wasn't a great movie, but I just really... it was one of those where I found it endlessly entertaining, even though I knew it wasn't great. That's
all
why
right. Well,
I knew I'd get shit,
you know,
for it.
You like it.
Hey.
I was going to say Legend, but we already talked about that one, so I'll bring up another one that I love. And it's certainly not lesser known. Everybody's heard of it. But it to me, it doesn't get the credit it deserves. And I think Willow.
I knew that was coming. I knew it.
It is such a fun fantasy film. And for people who liked it, they might be interested to know if they don't know. But they actually put out a series of books that followed the film. And the books were written by Chris Claremont. And people who may not know who he is, he actually used to write the X-Men comic books for a long time, and I think during its most enduring run.
Yeah, that was one of the heights of the X-Men franchise.
Yeah, I mean, he was, and I think probably still is, the writer of the best X-Men books they ever put out. But he wrote a trilogy of Willow books with notes from Lucas, and I actually read them, and I thought they were fantastic. Kind of dark. You know, we were talking about dark fantasy earlier. Those are pretty dark reads. I mean, Willow in the movie is, you know, he's this short little guy and he wants to be a wizard and he's always keeping a stiff upper lip. You get in those books and it takes place, you know, years after Willow, and he's a pretty dark, crusty fuck. So if you like Willow and want more of it, go check out the books. There's three of them and they're really good. But
and Val Kilmer was so good in that movie. Really,
yeah,
it's
Mad Mardigan, and I forget the name of the girl. Sasha?
Who cares?
No. I forget the name of the princess chick, but she was fun, too. It was a good romantic foil for him. So, yeah, there you go, Willow. Thoroughly enjoy it. And it had just come out on Blu-ray. I think it just came out on Blu-ray. I've got it on Blu-ray. Looks good. All right,
it's like an Amazon ad. You're like, and Willow is available on DVD and Blu-ray September 24th.
Like you have an Amazon Associates account to benefit from that. Last question, our nerd war. We always do it. Khal Drogo, Aragorn, and Conan are in a tavern when suddenly a brawl breaks out.
Whose is it?
Whose is it? Well, how big is it now, Harry? When the dust clears, which of those three is left standing? Brian, who wins in that fight?
Well, I mentioned this to Aaron earlier, but Jason Momoa's got about a 66, 67% chance of coming out of this alive.
I'm going with the Arnold Conan.
Okay. just saying. You threw out two characters played by the same guy.
I gotcha.
But anyway, touché. My money is on Aragorn.
Really?
He's older. He's more experienced. He's fought off gajillions of orcs and all Uruk-hai and all those other things. He's led so many armies. He's just, that whole Lord of the Rings stuff revolved around him. So.
And what was the name of his sword? Shit, I forget. Look, don't tell me Aaron knows.
I don't, but I can Google fast.
I completely forget because
edit it so it sounds like I fucking knew exactly what.
Well,
it
of
was.
Course, you know, Frodo had Sting, which was originally found in The Hobbit.
Andoril?
Narsil.
The Narsil was the blade that stabbed Frodo. That's Andoril. One of the Ringwraith's
Andoril.
Blade.
Yep, Andoril, Flame of the West.
There you go. So you think Aragorn. Aaron, what about you?
I think Conan, if you're talking Arnold Conan, because he's called Conan the Barbarian and the fucking Destroyer, and I think he'd fuck all of them up. That's what I think. That's what I'm going with. Aragorn's a pretty warrior, and I think he can get the job done. But I think Conan would just slice him down the middle. He wouldn't be nice about it.
Especially going back to the Robert E. Howard books, Conan was a killing motherfucker. And I like Khal Drogo and I like Aragorn, but I think if you throw them in Thunderdome, Conan is the one coming out with both of their heads hanging off his belt, their hair, you know, keeping it tight on. He is just a brutal, lumbering badass of a man. I mean, Jesus Christ, watch that Arnold movie and him pushing that wheel of pain around and around. Ugh, fuck. That dude is awesome. Khal Drogo's a badass, but I don't think he stands toe-to-toe with those two. All right, well, you guys have any other kind of fantasy-themed items to throw out there before we head off into the, I don't know, long time ago and far away.
Yeah,
place.
I got a question. When you have franchises like Lord of the Rings, which are the most famous, and that's honestly one of the first real fantasy endeavors I took on, because when I read it, it was the one book. You know, it wasn't. I actually read the whole as one. I didn't read it at three separate books. So I mean, that whole world was just ridiculous to me how involved it was. But it was very. It was dark, but it wasn't evil. Would you like to see an even darker take on Lord of the Rings down the road? Not for a while, obviously, but down the road. Like a Game of Thrones-style version of Lord of the Rings.
No, I don't think. I think that the tone Peter Jackson struck with his films is as close as I think you can get to the books. I mean, hell, actually, if you consider that he took out some of its more, I hate to use the phrase fruity, but singing characters, it's actually, it may be even a little darker than the books were.
I'm saying, would you like to see it go darker? Would you like to see like a rated R?
No, because then it would take away from the tone and theme of the books. And I like for the spirit to be intact in adaptations. You don't have to be 100% literal, but at least keep the spirit. And a darker take, I don't think, would be doing that.
Fair enough. Nah. Yeah, I agree. I'm happy with this for the next, I don't know, 20 years or more.
Sounds good.
Do you actually think anybody would try to reboot that franchise within our generation?
Fuck yes. Absolutely, I think they will. I think once The Hobbit's run its course, 5, 10, 15 years from now, you're going to see another Lord of the Rings. That series has made way too much money for them.
Well, there's a lot of difference between 5 and 15 years, but I get what you're
You know
saying.
What I'm saying. Yeah, but that would still be our generation. So, yeah, it's going to happen in our lifetime. It's going to happen in the next, I'd say, 10, 15 years. You're going to see it rebooted. I think you're going to see Harry Potter rebooted sooner.
Really?
I think so. Absolutely.
Why did I just go up and pitch on it? Really?
I don't know, but that was really high-pitched.
It wasn't really.
I mean,
now I can't
think
even
of
replicate it.
Think of each one of those. Each one of those movies. And there's 8 movies total. 7 books, but 8 movies. And each one of them made close to $1 billion. And the last one made like 1.2 or 4, whatever it was, billion worldwide. That is one of the biggest franchises in history. There's no way they don't reboot it.
The only reason I would want them, or I would be okay with them rebooting that series, is because I think the first couple of movies, Chris Columbus, I got nothing against you, but I just don't think those films have the proper tone to them.
I didn't like the movies.
A lot of what made the books good.
I didn't like the movies. I thought the first two were bland as hell. And
yeah,
it's Chris Columbus.
I'd rather have
a
more talented director be at the helm of that.
That first one, I swear to God, I was waiting for Macaulay Culkin to run up and slap himself in the camera. I mean, that's how just juvenile I thought it was.
Make a little cameo.
Hi, Chris.
Magic some paint cans into somebody's face. Uh-huh.
Joe Pesci runs by. I could see it.
Yeah, you're probably right. Within the next, like you said, 10 years or so,
it's going to happen.
They'll probably be rebooted. Sorry. Then they'll have to find a whole new cast of characters and hope they finish the films before they get too much 5 o'clock shadow to be believable 18-year-olds.
Oh, who do you?
I was really afraid for a while there that Daniel Radcliffe was going to look, you know, hey, Hermione would go in and just have a fucking beard because they were taking so long putting those movies out.
Is there anybody or any property that you want to see adapted other than that book series you were talking about, The Wheel or whatever?
Wheel of Time. I'm not a fan of the Wheel of Time. I've actually become, when I was a kid or younger, I really loved epic fantasy. And that's what Game of Thrones, Wheel of Time, and those kind of books are called, epic fantasies, because they have big worlds, large casts of characters. I used to love them, but ever since I, you know, probably hit my 30s and on, I've found less and less to like about them. I find them more indulgent in book form. Now, in TV form, I would give Wheel of Time a try. But in book form, I don't read them. It's just, I read Game of Thrones. I'm not reading the rest of them. They're too fucking long. But we've mentioned it before. The Dark Tower series, I would love to see made into a TV show on HBO or Showtime. And it is very much a fantasy, even though it has elements of horror and Western and sci-fi. It is a fantasy.
Yeah, it crosses over a lot of different lines and, you know, and even into current time. So it's, but definitely you're right. That one should be done as a series over the course of a, you know, handful of seasons. It's one of those, I think I wish they would, it's hard. I know from the studio's perspective, they're not going to do this, but to say, okay, we'll give you 5 years or 5 seasons at whatever, at a minimum of 10, but maybe up to say like 16 or mm-hmm. so. Episodes each season, and that way they can kind of start, okay, well, we'll start, here's how we'll break it down, and then we'll go from there. But I'd love to see that.
I would like to see Dark Tower. I didn't even read all the books, but I would like to see that.
All right, well, let's go ahead and bring this, our fourth episode of Hoes After Hours, to a close. If you want to reach out to us and let us know your thoughts and your opinions on what we've talked about today, or if there's a particular subject that you'd like us to talk about in our after hours, you can go over to www.thehollywoodoutsider.com and let us know. We're on facebook.com/thehollywoodoutsider, and on Twitter, we're @H_outsider. You can send us an email to feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com, or you can call and leave us a message or a text at 818-81-I'm-A-Ho. That's 818-814-6246. Tell all of your friends and your family and your neighbors. Hide your kids, hide your wife. Subscribe on iTunes and Zune. Listen on your Stitcher radio app. give us a thumbs up on Stitcher if you can, or a 5-star review on iTunes, or just go to your getting plain old RSS feed. Folks, stay geek strong. Aaron and Brian, thank you so much for coming on and helping me talk about this subject, which is near and dear to my heart.
Hey, man, my pleasure. It's been fun.
Absolutely.
Stay geek strong.